and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up today, the snow's falling, England are out of the World Cup, and the Premiership is making its comeback. Yes, Christmas has come early. Yes, I am your host, not Andrew Slaven, but I am indeed Laura Brannan. And I'm joined this week by the ever-present, does all the dirty work, spine of the team, it's Finlay Marks. Hello, Finn.
Hello, how you doing?
All right. And of course, subbing in for Andrew this week, it is the ever-reliable, super sub off the bench, Anthony Joseph from Sky Sports. How are you, Anthony?
All good, thanks.
Guys, there's been some amazing gifs and memes that have come out of the only story in town, obviously, from the weekend, Lily Blues. But a bit closer to home, what's been catching your eye this week?
Well, Tony Mowbray talking about chocolate. He seems to love his revels and went into such detail about the coconut ones of the past and then the new ones that they brought in. And it was such a great part of the press conference and just showed like how down to earth he was. And he said even at 7 o'clock in the morning, if he's driving in, he always has an open packet in his car. I think a lot of people can relate to that. I know people who do that as well.
I can appreciate this. I mean, as somebody who listens to a lot of press conferences, they get really boring. So yeah, a wee bit of insight is nice. And I did not know you used to get coconut revels.
Same. I was going to bring
this
up.
They sound amazing.
Is it one of those things, right? Because also as well, right, I'm 37 years old, and the amount of people slightly older than me that still refer to a Snickers as a marathon, in my lifetime, I have no living knowledge of Snickers being called anything other than Snickers. I know the change kind of happened in the early 90s or whatever, but I'm not aware of it. But I know it's happened, but with this, I genuinely have never heard anybody talk about coconut revels before. Was it a thing?
They sound amazing. Can they please come back?
Yeah.
That's quite controversial as well, isn't it? Because what is it, the celebrations are on this sale minus the bounties? Because so many people have complained about them being part of the team. To me, that's the best one. Why would you ruin it?
Oh, I think with the bounties, it's just that you can get packets without bounties in them. They're not getting rid of bounty and celebration boxes altogether. Good. It's good. Not like the travesty of Greg's getting rid of macaroni pies altogether. You can still get both options.
Sorry, you're saying you can get a bounty-free version of a celebration box?
Yeah.
You'll get a celebrations box. It's just like original and then bounty free.
I'm kind of worried about like if somebody doesn't know you that well for Christmas and they get you like the safe kind of chocolate box option, but they don't know you well enough to give you the one without the bounty. I'd be gutted. Anyway, let's stick to football. Finn, have you seen anything that's not chocolate related?
My favourite thing that I saw this week was Barry Bannon, who's now the captain at Sheffield Wednesday. He was on a Sheffield Wednesday podcast talking about signing himself on Football Manager on his Celtic save and then pretty much dropping himself immediately because he wasn't good enough for the first team. My favourite bit of information that came out of this little podcast thing that he did was the fact that he doesn't play the game as the manager called Barry Bannon. He actually calls himself Barry Benigno, the manager, which I just thought was absolutely sensational. Yeah, I loved that.
I wanted to raise, I know there's been a bone of contention on the podcast through recent weeks where I kind of controversially maybe say that I don't like free kicks as goals and I don't think they're that impressive. I just want to raise my hands here and say I've finally found a free kick goal that I think is impressive. The Netherlands scoring literally the last kick of the ball against Argentina to make it 2-2. Now, if anyone, and surely everyone has seen it by now, the ball is passed into the player who just takes the most beautiful touch to drag it around, his body around, and slot it home. So it's not your top postage stamp screamer. It is just such a well-worked training ground move. And I think it was the fact that it was done in such a dramatic fashion as the last kick of the ball to take it to extra time.
Yeah.
It was just it was mind blown. It was, to me, it was one of the moments of the entire tournament so far.
I was lying on the sofa hungover that day and it got me off my feet. Actually, I just stood up and I was like, wow, hold up, hands on the head. I was like, oh my God, what is going on?
How amazing are these moments? These are the moments you live for in the World Cup when you're actually shouting at the TV to a side you don't care about. I love it so much.
I think it's happened a few times at the World Cup before. Ironically, I think one of them was Argentina when they played England in 1998. I seem to remember scored a similar type free kick, which was a short free kick. You know, the player lines up as if he's going to hit it himself, direct at the goal, but he actually plays it short to a player that of his team that's been lining up in the wall, and he peels off and they score that way. And an even deeper cut for you, I remember Thomas Brolin scoring for Sweden at the 1994 World Cup in the USA with a really beautifully worked free kick like that, where he was hanging on at the end of the wall of the opposing team. I think it was Romania in the knockout stages. And the free kick taker goes to line up as if he's going to smash it, lays it off cutely to the side, and then Brolin just peels away from the wall, smashes it across the goal, and it goes in. There's a World Cup deep cut for you, Laura, as well.
Love it. How are you guys enjoying the World Cup? Obviously, we've got like only a couple of games left at this time of recording. It's almost all over. I'm actually heartbroken. Are you guys enjoying it as much as I am? Because to me, this is probably the best tournament I can remember. In recent years anyway.
I'm enjoying it a lot more after the weekend, I can tell you that. I'm really, really going to enjoy the semi-finals. No particular reason.
A lot less stressful now.
It's just relief now, isn't it? We can relax. I can enjoy going to work.
I don't care
this
who wins it now.
Morocco are messy for me.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think that's the two things for me. I would love, how amazing would it be if Morocco went on to, I mean, getting to the final would be sensational, especially beating France. But the teams that they've knocked out on the way or beaten
that's
along
incredible.
The way, Belgium, Spain and Portugal, like, they're there on merit. It's been astonishing. And obviously it's tasty with the match against France coming up as well. But, oh man, I'm Team Morocco all the way.
Oh, it's incredible because, I mean, you look at the list of teams that England have played in recent, and probably I think there's been lists going round of all the teams they've played in the World Cup, or any tournament actually in recent years, and none of them are impressive teams that they've beat, because it's always the bigger teams they lose to. And then you look at Morocco, and they've just beat big team after big team after big team in just one tournament. Mm. I think it's, to me, a dream scenario would be Croatia-Morocco final. Obviously, we're recording this before both the semi-finals, so this could be hideously out of date quite quickly. But to me, that's underdog central. Plus, mm-hmm. I've got a soft spot for Croatia because of when I worked at Coppa 90 and I did a documentary on them. And they came so close in the last tournament, obviously getting to the final. I would just love to see them, with that connection with them, I'd love to see them get over the line. And also in Morocco, I've got a kind of personal connection because one of the West Ham players is playing for them as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of bored by like the whole Messi, Ronaldo, one of them's got to win a World Cup to crown themselves the best in the world. I don't care about that. It's too predictable for me. That's a wee bit boring. So yeah, I've absolutely well and truly planted my flag in both of those courts.
Another amazing thing about Morocco, I read a piece today. It was really good. It was about this whole project that they started from 2007. The king put £12 million into a soccer academy and built all these state-of-the-art facilities and pitches and things like that. And his aim was that they reached semi-final or final by 2022.
Wow.
So that...
Wow.
I just love hearing stuff like that. I remember doing a piece when I was working back in Scotland on the Clairefontaine Centre in France and how they'd been knocked out. I'm going to have to try and remember. They'd been knocked out of something in the late 80s, and they had a 10-year plan to go and win the World Cup by 98, and then they did win the World Cup in 98. Wow. I know France, a much bigger footballing nation and everything, but I love those kind of stories where someone has that kind of vision and that kind of a project that almost, well, that works as well. Yeah. And especially when it's a country like Morocco, who are not known for being at the latter stages of major tournaments like the World Cup. So it's just, I just thought it was a really good, really good thing to see.
Is there any way we can get this guy's mobile number and give it to Rod Petrie? at the top of the SFA. And see if we can get ourselves to a World Cup semi-final or a final in the next 15 years or so.
You mean King Mohammed of Morocco? That is actually it.
He's got to have a mobile phone, right? We can definitely we've got the contacts. We can put him in touch with Rod.
Let's give it more. Let's bring it back to Scottish football again. What has been hitting the headlines this week?
Yeah, well, there's some news coming out of St Johnston this week. Major shareholder Jeff Brown is going to donate some of the proceeds of his sale of the club to their community trust. So it means all the money is basically being kept in St Johnston and the work that the community trust does. And it's great. It's very selfless from Jeff Brown, but it's for a club like St Johnston, it's really important. Obviously, not one of the bigger clubs, the more well-supported clubs. And Perth always gets everyone. When they talk about St Johnston and Perth, they always say, oh, Perth isn't a football town, or it's not like a massive football area. So the work that the Community Trust does is always really important about getting St Johnston's name out there and constantly trying to get that community feel with the club and its people, the people of Perth.
Yeah, it's class. Finn, have you seen anything recently?
Oh, just one thing that was in the news this week. Leon King signing a 2-year contract extension that will keep him at Rangers until 2026, which I think is a really good bit of business. He'd been, even before he signed his first professional contract, he was courting a bit of attention. And I guess it's just the place where not just Rangers, but all kind of Scottish teams will be, regardless of their status, kind of in the football food chain now, where there is always the danger of very talented young players coming through the academies just getting snapped up because they'll be offered, you know, contracts and wages that will set them up for life by Premier League clubs who just take it as a punt, and if they don't work out, it's no skin off their nose. So it would be quite a significant investment from most Scottish clubs to keep them there. It's just really good though, because I think he's, you know, had a bit of a baptism of fire. He's only 18 years old and come into a Rangers team that's struggled for form in a lot of different ways this season. He's never looked nervous, but I think he has struggled at points. You know, there was one point, I think, just before the break where he was the only fit centre-back Rangers had in the first team squad. And he's been not hung out to dry, but just the way that you would ideally want to bleed a centre-back into a team like that is alongside a well-established first team player like Conor Goldson, who has been out with injury, and that's actually Leon King's been filling in that position. So I think it's good to see Scottish talent staying within the league, within the teams for a little bit longer, and hopefully something that, you know, he does do well enough that he wants to get picked up by a club maybe abroad or down in the Premier League. But, you know, Rangers would be able to command hopefully a decent fee for him. But I hope that goes for not just Rangers but other young players, exciting prospects at clubs across the Premiership.
All seems very logical. Something that's not very logical is the Scottish Cup rules this season. So the SFA have confirmed VAR will only be used in a few of the Scottish Cup games in the fourth round. Surely this is a wind-up, guys. What is going on here?
I think it makes sense.
Oh, Anthony!
Sorry. Sorry, Laura. But I mean, VAR doesn't change the rules of the game. It just adds another referee to the game and you've got technology that allows you to see other things. I remember when they started introducing refs at the byline. Do you remember that? And like the Champions League and all that? It started just with the latter stages of the tournament. They started doing that and then they introduced it in certain leagues, and now it's quite normal to have it. So for me, it's just like doing that. I have the same opinion about introducing it midway through the season. I'm not sure if you guys are for that or against that, but I sort of agreed with the SFA on it because they're basically saying, well, we've paid all this money for this technology. We've now got it. Would you rather we waited until 6, 7 months, 8 months later, or we use it now? Now we've got it.
Right. Just for a bit of context here, right? So the SFA have said only the cup games at Premiership grounds that are going to be live on television will have VAR. So they've not chosen the live games yet, but it's looking most likely it'll be St Johnston against Rangers, Celtic against Morton, and Hibs against Hearts. There's a likely chance that, for example, Aberdeen could get picked for TV. They're away to Darvel, though, so they wouldn't have VAR. So here's a Premiership team on TV, but because they're not at home, they're not getting it. And then you've got the likes of Dundee United, Kelly and St Mirren, who are all at home, Premiership teams at home, but because the TV cameras aren't there, they're being told they can only have VAR if they pay for it. And it's about £10,000 to actually use it. So the way I'm seeing it is, it's such a fine detail of what allows you to have it, that it could only possibly be three games that have it out of an entire round. And come on, the fourth round of the Scottish Cup is the best round, possibly the best weekend of the entire season. There's so many fixtures. What is it about those three games that means they're entitled to have their game watched differently and refereed differently to others? To me, it's just so controversial. If you're going to have VAR, have it in all games, or have it in none?
I think it's an interesting point. I can kind of see both sides of the argument. I was reading comments that Des Roach, who we had on the podcast a number of weeks ago, kind of on the advent of VAR being introduced into the league, who has his own podcast, the Get Involved Referee podcast, which is great if you've never heard it. He was saying what you're saying, Laura. He thinks it's unfair to have something applied unevenly across a competition. So, because I think the point you were making, Anthony, where it's like, you know, you've got a certain stage of a competition where certain things come in. So I know, like in the Europa League, I think it was, in recent seasons, VAR wouldn't come in. I think it was until the knockout stages. So the groups didn't have it, but the knockouts did. But that example that you were saying is something that comes on uniformly. So it reaches a certain point in the competition, then every match has it, which I think if you're going to do it halfway through, that's the fair way to do it. My personal feeling is that it does feel unfair. I think it's unfair that, as you're saying, Laura, like teams will be refereed to a different standard because they have this extra fallback where a right decision can be made that might not necessarily be allowed to be made because of the eyes on it and the way that they're able to referee the game in a match that doesn't have VAR. But then again, at the same time, I can see the argument of like, well, we've got this system in place ready to go at certain places. Why wouldn't you use it? Because those games, even if it is unfair, will then have the ability to have this extra bit that we can add on. I think I was trying to understand because I think, is it right? Am I right in saying, Anthony, they kind of already used this system in the FA Cup in England? That it's staggered. So it's only really the Premier League games. Yeah.
Is it the same that it's only the games that are on live TV, or is it any ground, like top flight ground, that's got the ability to do it?
I'm not sure, but certainly in last season's FA Cup, when they were at the round of 32, only 9 home clubs used VAR, which is just it's just going to be similar to what is happening here. I do actually get the point that you made. It is good. A game is going to be refereed differently, but it's going to be seen and watched differently. It's the rules of the game still apply. The rules aren't different. It's just going to have another pair of eyes on it and different camera angles.
It's nuts to think that, say, for example, hypothetically, right? So these are the three games that go on: Hibs and Hearts, Celtic, Morton, St Johnstone Rangers. What if hypothetically Rangers go out, Celtic go out, Hearts go out? So you're left with St Johnstone and Hibs, and they both get away ties in the next round to lower league teams. You could have a scenario where these three games are the only ones in the entire competition, well, up until probably the semi-finals and finals at Hampden, because I imagine they'll have them by default. But in all of our previous rounds, and this is a competition that's included every team in Scotland, and they're the only three games in the whole competition that could hypothetically have VAR. I just find that it's absolutely nuts that it's that fine a detail that picks it out, as that's the rules.
The FA Cup probably has that same problem in England as well, but eventually the bigger teams stay in it, don't they? Yeah, look, I do get your point. I just feel like VAR is, we talk about it too much when it's just help. That's all it is. It's not, even with VAR, we still get scenarios where a handball that looks similar to another handball in another game, there's different conclusions because it is humans that are still making the decision.
Chaos, euphoria in the away stands, blue limbs everywhere.
It's been a whole month since the Premiership teams were in competitive action, and they make their way back this weekend. In fact, they make their way back just before this weekend because Rangers are hosting Hibs first. They're up on Thursday night. Finn, a lot has changed for Rangers during the break. How are they shaping up ahead of this one?
I think it's slightly difficult to know exactly how they're shaping up. But yeah, I think the changes that have happened, obviously Giovanni van Bronckhorst leaving the club and Michael Beale being installed as the new manager, they definitely seem to have given an air of optimism, I think, or renewed optimism among the support. Certainly Michael Beale, I think, has been, I mentioned this in the podcast the other week, but he's been saying all the right things. Whether or not that translates to results on the pitch remains to be seen. But he's assembled quite an interesting, intriguing back team at Ibrox, I think. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. They had a friendly against Bayer Leverkusen at Ibrox at the weekend and won 3-0, which I thought was quite impressive. I mean, you always take a result in a friendly with a pinch of salt because it's more about the exercise. And he said something interesting after the game where he kind of felt the match, he felt almost kind of got in the way of doing all the prep that he wanted to get done before the game against Hibs. But I think 3-0 against a team of Leverkusen's quality can only really be seen as a good thing. There were no injuries during the game. Malik Tillman scored a double, and it's interesting because I think Beale's identified him as a player. He didn't outright say it, but I think he kind of in a roundabout way said he's been played out of position. He doesn't want to play the position that he's been playing so far this season. And I think the Rangers can unlock something there, which is a goal-scoring midfielder. It could be a real exciting, important aspect of their arsenal for the second half of the season.
Anthony Hibbs didn't exactly go into the break on sparkling form, did they? I think they won only one in their last five games. What have they been up to during the break?
Yeah, well, Lee Johnson was basically saying he was quite glad for the break to come along. They needed a few players to have a rest. Some teams have had longer breaks, some have had shorter. Hibbs seems to be one of the shorter ones. They played a few friendlies as well. They beat Raith Rovers 1-0 in a friendly. I guess a blow for Lee Johnson was Martin Boyle drilled out for the rest of the World Cup for Australia and will be out for a wee bit for them. So he's going to have to try and find a replacement. But I think he'll be happy that a few other players are back. Should be a great game under the lights. I'd be silly not to plug it. That's live on Sky. Hibs have been involved in quite a few of these Friday night games. I remember they played against St Johnstone. That was quite a good game. And Aberdeen as well, up at Pittodrie. That was a thriller. There always seems to be drama when Rangers play Hibs, doesn't there? So it'll be a great opening return for the Scottish Premiership.
Bridging the gap nicely as well after two semi-finals in the World Cup. I mean, it's always a bit weird when you go into the next night afterwards and you're like, ugh, my life's so empty, I don't have a game. So yeah, I'm kind of grateful actually that this game's on Sky. Looking forward to it. Then on Saturday, Aberdeen host Celtic in the lunchtime kickoff. So it's third versus first. But Jim Goodwin's already flagged up that he's after, was it some defensive cover, some sort of backline duty on his shopping list when the transfer opens, hasn't he, Finn?
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, they sold Calvin Ramsey a couple of weeks before the break to Liverpool. So I think they'll be looking for cover in that kind of area. I saw some reports that Jim Goodwin's looking at Tranmere defender Josh Dacre-Cogley. I don't know a great deal about, but he seems to have had a pretty consistent season for Tranmere in League Two. It's a market that Jim Goodwin is used to good effect previously, so they're potentially in pre-contract discussions now, which always has the potential to bring in a player early if a deal can be struck between their clubs. Obviously a big miss for Aberdeen at the weekend will be Liam Scales, who's on loan from Celtic and has been really good for Aberdeen on loan this season, but he can't play against his parent club, which could be a bit of a blow defensively for Aberdeen.
Celtic, of course, will be without Juranovic, who is still on World Cup duty in Qatar. Obviously, at the time of recording this, we don't know how the semi-final has gone, but obviously, even if he does go out, he's not going to be back in time for a trip to Pittodrie. In the 3 o'clock kickoffs, Hearts welcome Killy. Anthony, how have Hearts been getting on over the break? Apart from getting into scraps in Spain, which was still one of the best stories to come out of Scottish football during a break.
You say apart from that, I think that's all there is to talk about.
That's all we care about.
Yeah, exactly. Hearts actually had a longer break than most teams. They actually had just 2 weeks straight off. Big game against Kilmarnock, who've sort of not really set the heather alight, have they, since they've come up. But got a couple good couple of results in their last few games, and they'll be hoping to build on that. But Hearts, I guess, they want to be third, so they'll be hoping perhaps that Aberdeen don't take points off Celtic, and they've got a great chance at home against Kelly to get 3 points on the board.
Speaking of not quite setting the heather on light, bottom of the table, Dundee United go to Livy. They really need to ramp it up now, don't they, Finn? It's getting to that stage of the season now. They can't be sitting down at the bottom, propping up the table much longer, can they?
Yeah, but we've been kind of saying this for a number of weeks before
yeah, we have.
Before the break. I think there was maybe a bit of a false dawn because there was a period in, I think it was October, where they beat Aberdeen and Hibs in back-to-back matches, and then I think they got a draw away at Ross County, and we were like, oh, they might have turned a corner, you know, but then after that Ross County game, in the six games before the break in all competitions, they had five defeats. The interesting thing is, so they've only won three games all season. Two of those wins have been 4-0 victories, though, against Aberdeen and then Killy, actually not long before the break as well. So when they win in style, it's just they don't tend to do it very often. I think it'll be tricky this weekend going away to Livy. Livy sitting in fourth, and Livy won at Tannadice earlier on in the season. I remember it being quite a close game that kind of could have gone either way, and I think it was Montaño that was scored a decisive goal in that game. But yeah, they really need to start getting runs on the board. A break like this can go either way. I think for teams that had a great deal of momentum before the break, you know, they probably wouldn't have been looking as the break as a good thing. But for teams like Dundee United, it's the perfect opportunity to stop, gather yourselves, try and reset and hit the ground running after the break. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and see if anything drastic has changed over the course of the month off that they've had.
It's Motherwell 2022 versus Motherwell 2019 at Fir Park. Sorry. Okay, it's Motherwell against St Mirren. I can't actually wait to watch this one. Motherwell, they played Spurs in a training ground friendly down in London. They lost 4-0, but as you're saying, you can't read too much into these friendly results, can you? I think it really is just what now happens in the games for Stephen Hamill. He's, as I've keep saying in previous weeks, he's got so much backing from the fans and the players, but he really needs to get a big win now under his belt because they've not been on a good run at all. It really needs to come soon for him, I think, just to kind of lift those spirits and kind of get everyone's confidence up again. Stephen Robinson, on the other hand, St Mirren hit a kind of rocky patch as well just before the break. He only had 1-7. Obviously, Bacchus is not going to be back after his break with Australia, so they're going to be a man down there. But I've obviously got allegiances to both sides for obvious reasons, but I'm really looking forward to this one. And the last fixture is Ross County welcoming St Johnstone. Anthony, this is one of these games where absolutely anything could happen, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I actually think there's a few like that, including the one you were just talking about, Motherwell St Mirren. It's actually so tight between 5th and 12th. You've got 9 points. And when you look at St Johnstone, who are away to Ross County this weekend, they're sitting nicely in sixth place, but only on 21 points compared to Ross County, who are 10th on 15. So a win for Ross County puts them up to 8th. So it's like, but Ross County don't have a good home record at the moment. They've only won two of their games. St Johnstone's away record isn't too bad. They played 8 away games and they've taken points from half of them, winning 3 of them. So yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you who's going to win that. I'm going to avoid that on my coupon at the weekend. just like a few of these games, but it's just going to be quite an interesting period. We always talk about the Christmas and New Year period being there's quite a lot of games. It kind of sets up the season. People talk about it being the business end of the season. I hate saying that because you end up saying it about so many periods of the season. This is really a point where it does set you up for the second half of the season, the festive period. And with it being so tight between 5th and 12th, I think we might see some teams like Hearts and perhaps even Hibs move further up the table and pull away, and the others coming down and creating what we will soon know as the relegation battle.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Dundee booked their place in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup last week with a 3-0 win over Falkirk, but it's their league form that will be keeping the confidence high at Dens Park right now. Gary Bower's side have won their last four championship games. It's moved them right up into the mix at the top of the table as well. They're now just a point off Ayr United, and they travel to them 2 days before Christmas. That is going to be a tasty one. We're joined now by the Evening Telegraph and Courier journalist, George Cran. George, thanks for coming on. I think it's fair to say everyone's kind of talking about Ayr right now, but Dundee aren't caring about Hollywood stories, are they? Surely they're just looking to go straight back up again.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I think they're probably ignoring any sort of nice stories down at Ayr United. Quietly going about their business, but they're making a bit of noise now, I think. Six wins on the trot in all competitions, so it's... they're really starting to kind of pick up steam under Gary Bower, and it looks like he's found the kind of system that suits his team, and they're really flying at the moment.
What was that rebuilding job like over the summer? Like, how much has he changed things?
In terms of personnel, not that much, because they had a lot of players who are contracted beyond the end of last season. Gary Bower only brought in two permanent signings, but he seems to have just brought a calmness. He's quite a cheerful kind of personality about him, and he's quite an honest kind of way he goes about things. I think the players have really appreciated that, and it's more than just the manager. They've changed their training ground to... they didn't have a training ground before. They've moved into a new place at Dundee and Angus College, which has made a big difference, I think, off the park. And there seems to be a real togetherness about the squad that last season certainly hurt them a lot. I think they maybe channeled that into something positive this season.
Just one question I wanted to ask, talking about last season. I just wanted to get your opinion on the way that the club replaced James McPake midway through the season and brought in Mark McGee. It was kind of something that raised maybe a few eyebrows at the time. I know Dundee hadn't been playing particularly well under McPake. Was it something that surprised you when they brought in McGee halfway through the season?
Yeah, it certainly surprised me when they sacked James McPake, because I was actually on holiday from work. So it was my very first day off, and suddenly the Dundee managers got sacked, so the office cancelled. The timing was absolutely horrendous. Yeah. I think, I'm trying to remember the exact form, but he'd won his last two games.
That's right, yeah.
He'd won at Tynecastle, yeah. And then he won a cup match up at Peterhead 3-0. And it seemed like things had maybe turned a wee bit much more positive, and it looked like they were maybe getting back on track. And then suddenly this kind of bombshell comes, they decide to get rid of James McPake and bring in Mark McGee, who had... not sure it was anyone's pick outside, maybe who was actually making the decisions. Yeah. And it obviously didn't turn out well. It had a big negative effect on the playing squad. Yeah. I do know that for certain. Just the shock factor, I think. The players were certainly playing for James McPake and liked him. I don't think they appreciated the way things ended. And then Mark McGee was just the wrong fit. Yeah. Don't forget that he had a suspension hanging over his head when they brought him in of six matches, which it was just bonkers all around, I think.
Yeah, absolutely bizarre. As well in the summer, you've talked about one or two of the players that were coming in and out. A noticeable difference from the side would be Charlie Adam leaving the club. Has that taken a bit of time to figure out a way to find a system to play without him being in the team? Because he was so pivotal, not just last season, although, you know, it was a slightly difficult season, but in his time before that, like, he was instrumental in getting the club back up to the Premiership. Has it been difficult losing a player of that ability and that aura, I guess, around the club too?
He was certainly a player with massive influence on the team and the club as a whole. I think the way he went about his being a footballer and his kind of personality and attitude, and when you speak to him and you speak to him about football, you could kind of see how he got so far, and I think that rubbed off on the players that were there as well.
How did it feel watching Jason Cummings struggle to make an impact at Dens and now watching him at the World Cup for Australia?
It was incredible, to be honest. I absolutely loved it. He was always a joy to interview. I'm sure that anyone who's interviewed him knows it was always good fun. And he was a good player at Dundee. He played a big part in Dundee getting promoted. He scored some really important goals in their run that got them up through the playoffs. And then, to be honest, not getting a game for Dundee a year ago, I'm not sure how much of a surprise it was. I always felt that Jason Cummings was a player who was better in a team that was challenging for a title or at the top end of a league rather than a team that's scrapping at the bottom and need a kind of old-fashioned target man, I guess, that holds the ball up and gets the team up the park. If you got a chance, Jason Cummings would stick it away. But I think the move to Australia has certainly suited him, I think. And obviously it's worked out quite well in the end. On the pitch against Mbappe and stuff like that. So
he'd learned the words to the national anthem as well, hadn't he? He was belting out. Just finally, George, what's the latest on the new stadium? What's the feeling among the fans about moving to a new stadium?
Oh, God, a new stadium. It's been going on for so long. The feeling is certainly that it's moving forward much more now than it has done in the past. I don't think they've put planning permission in yet, but it's coming pretty soon. So it certainly feels a lot closer than it has done for a long time. Because I do remember chatting to John Nelms maybe 2017, and they said there'd be a spade in the ground in 2018, and then we're 2022, and it's not arrived yet. I think overall, from what I can see, fans are kind of welcoming the chance to maybe move into a new stadium. Dens is looking pretty tired and old. There are a few that don't want to move just because it's been the club's home for over 100 years. And the main concern that fans have at the moment is that the plan is to buy back Dens Park. Dens is owned by a local businessman called John Bennett, and there's been a kind of a deal agreed with him and the Dundee's owners to buy that back. And then their plan is to sell the land, use some of that money to help fund the new stadium over at Camperdown Park. And then in the meantime, obviously, they wouldn't have a home. They wouldn't have Dens Park to play in, and the new stadium would hopefully be getting built at that point. That's the plan, that there won't be a big gap. They're going to have to ground share at some point, I think. Fans are concerned what happens if they sell Dens Park and the construction hasn't begun there and they end up homeless. John Elms has said Dundee will not be without a home, but I think fans just want reassured on that front, that they don't end up like Clydebank or I think Coventry down south that are having real troubles with their stadium. I think there's just a bit of concern. And obviously the history of Dundee and the problems they've had with owners over the years, there's just a wee bit of concern there, I think, as well. But overall, it's positive, I would say.
I just want to come back to the what's happening on the pitch just now as well. Laura mentioned at the top of the interview the game coming up away at Ayr United, top of the table clash just before Christmas. Do you think that could be a bit of a marker to put them in contention for the title if they go there and get a result at Somerset Park?
Certainly, yeah, I think so. Didn't enjoy the last trip down to Somerset Park. That was near the start of the season and got turned over. That was a really poor night, one of the lowest points of the season. They had another very low point at Cove Rangers, which was their last defeat in the league. They've got Cove before Ayr this Saturday, Dens Park. So I think these two games are two they want to put right. Dundee won the last six in all competitions. They haven't won seven in a row since 1974, something like that. So kind of shows the kind of run they're on that Dundee haven't had many runs like this in the past. If they can keep it going, I think they're favourites to win the title. I don't get to watch Ayr United every week, so I can't say how good or not they are, but I think it's certainly between those two. But I fancy Dundee just purely for the size of squad they've got, the depth they've got. They've been really struggling with injuries the last couple of weeks. I think they had seven or eight missing at Falkirk on Thursday. They couldn't fill the bench and they still won that game 3-0, which kind of shows the quality they've got. They've had quite a few players missing and they're still putting wins on the board.
That's all from us this week. Enjoy your Christmas parties, enjoy Scottish football coming back to normal, and watch out for Harry Kane's ball landing on your head. I think it's still on its way back down. We'll catch you next week.